We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 353 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Jay Hilton, and joining me is a man that I won't be selling for 80 million euros. It's Rafa Aldamui. How's it going, Rafa?
Hey, glad to be here once again. Woo! Jesus, I have a feeling that this will be like the theme of the 2022 summer for FC Barcelona.
Yeah.
This won't be the first... The first time we'll be here talking about something "quote unquote" crazy happening in the transfer window, but I'm doing well. That's what you asked me, so I'm doing well.
Yeah, that's what's going to be. It's a lot of what is reality. Is reality as sad and dire and awful as we think it is? As far as selling players go, I'm not just talking about who those players might be, but selling players. Or is what are the possibilities? What is the potential? Right, like there is definitely somewhere between needing to sell Frankie Young for only financial reasons and buying Erling Haaland, which Man City did. But before that, we do have to, before we're not going to do Haaland again, but instead of doing anything in sky blue, we'll talk about Celta first. Now, Celta, that match took place over 2 days ago. So only really a few quick notes here. And I think one of the longstanding things from that game is, I guess tying into the Frankie Young thing a little bit, is that without Pedri in the midfield, with just Gabi and Frankie de Jong in that double pivot in a 4-4-2, they had no control whatsoever. And it was a really, really weird match. That Celta match, I mean, and we're talking about the 60 minutes prior to the first 60 minutes, rather. So prior to Jason Murillo getting the red card, and then obviously with Gabi and Ronda Rojo smacking heads, we'll get that in a second. I just thought it was kind of weird where very much like Real Betis and Levante, these are teams that want to play. So you got this feeling that both teams were trying to play, but for Celta, you know, kind of being in the middle of the table, you know, other than the talisman, Iago Aspas, he had moments here and there. They weren't really doing anything too crazy. You know, Brais Mendes, he took a few too many touches on one or two occasions, and they probably could have scored a goal, but they weren't really putting too much pressure on Barca. In the same way, Barca in no way were controlling the match, but because they had four forwards, they were kind of, you know, making things happen occasionally before the first goal, 30 minutes in. And then once that happened, it was this thing, you know, this weird thing where, hey, isn't Javi Gailan the guy that Barcelona is supposed to be looking at? Isn't he one of the prime candidates, you know, not take over, but to back up Alba? And then we watch what Dembélé can do to him. And Dembélé, you know, it's an odd thing that next season, Gailan might be the Barca player and Dembélé would be not the Barca, right? And so it's just a little bit of funky moments, but what was your perception of that match? And you can give it to me anything, either the goals, because Barca scored three of them, and Dembélé was good, and Aubameyang on target, Memphis on target, Ferran Torres deserved to come out of halftime, and then we also got a Ricky Puig sighting. And that was, again, all before the injury. So give me what you got in the first 60 minutes.
I'll try to be like to the point. First of all, I thought it was interesting, to say the least, that Xavi preferred to change formation instead of what maybe you would have thought would be the easy thing to do, just put in Ricky Puig. Nico's out, Pedri's out, Buzzi's out. So don't mess with things and just put Ricky Puig in. I mean, we're already qualified for the Champions League. We're not winning the title. I know we're fighting for the second place, but at the end of the day, like if you're not going to put in Ricky Puig in this game, then you'll never, ever going to put him in. Because it just didn't make any sense. He tweaked with the formation, three at the back, four in the middle. Then like people were questioning, like, is Ferran going to play as an interior? Is it going to be Memphis? It didn't work, whatever he did. And then it clearly showed because Barca had no control whatsoever. Nobody knew what the hell they were doing in that formation and with those players on top of that. So it was like, it made sense for Xavi to go back to a back four. And then that's when things, I think, calmed down a little bit, if we're being honest. But yeah, I didn't like that Xavi. Like, it just goes to show, like, Jesus, like, this is a quote-unquote meaningless game. And we're, like, trying to, like, do the – what we call in Spanish, like, the manager is trying to, like, think seven steps ahead and just, like, dude, play it simple. Just keep it simple. And then Dembélé, it just goes to show how frustrating he is for the good and the bad, because his – we all know he's really fast. He can go by people, as he showed in that goal. What we question about Dembélé is his end product. And – against Celta, both of his assists were perfect. They weren't too complicated. He just needed to put the ball simply in the path of Memphis for the first goal. And the second goal, was it Aubameyang? I forgot who he assisted. Could have been
Ferran Torres or Aubameyang. But
exactly, that cross. But at the end of the day, that's what you kind of want from Dembélé, consistently speaking, that just for the play that requires a simple pass, do that. And sometimes it may sound weird, but Dembélé doesn't do the simple thing that you think he should do or execute the pass, a simple pass. Like, I'm not even talking about intricate passes and whatnot, just simple passes, the perfect amount of force, weight for the pass. And he did that. That's why Dembélé is so frustrating, because he has so much raw potential still. And you're like, will he ever put it together to be consistently good in all aspects of being a winger for Barcelona? I don't have the answer to that. He may not even be a Barca player next time I'm on this podcast. So who the hell knows? But apart from that, I'm glad to. The thing is, before Ansu came in, the only thing I'm looking forward during these last few games is to watch Ansu Fati. I'll be totally honest. I just want to watch Ansu, see that he's well. He doesn't have any setbacks, get him back in rhythm and whatnot. But right before Ansu came in, the Ronald Araujo thing happened. And that completely damped my mood. And I wasn't able to enjoy Ansu as much as I wanted to. I'm like, just get to the 60th minute. I want to see Ansu.
But let me just go on the Dembélé point real quick before we move on to Ansu and Araujo and everything. Dembélé leads the Liga in assists with 13. And one in front of Karim Benzema, but he has played more than 1,200 less minutes than Benzema, right? Dembélé has played 1,379, meaning 1,379 minutes, 20 matches played, 13 assists. Benzema, with 12 assists, has played 31 matches, so 11 more, and he's played 2,500 minutes, right? Like, you're right, Dembélé has a job, and it's to assist his teammates scoring goals, and he's done exactly what he's been asked for. And on the point of Ansu as well, that was kind of what, again, I'm looking for, but also I don't know how much to look for as well, because we're still seeing Ansu without Pedri, which I always go with the stat here, and it's not changed, because the second Ansu came back, Pedri was still out. So they've still played less than 15 total matches together in almost 3 years of time. 15 matches total, Pedri and Ansu have been on the field together. So I continue to say, we don't know. And then the Ansu Dembélé thing, you get a little bit of a taste when Barca is up by a man. So A, that throws off the spacing just a little bit. But as you had said too, the whole match was dampened. It was dampened by Araujo and, I mean, the ambulance on the field. I can't think of a time when I had seen the ambulancia on the field at the Camp Nou. I can't think of the last time. Certainly, I know there's images in the mid-90s. I don't remember who it was exactly. And I think there was an ambulance came on the field. I think it was for Bernd Schuster back in the 80s as well. Or he tackled somebody. Or it definitely was Athletic Club related. Not Atletico, but Athletic Club.
Maybe the Copa del Rey final when they broke Maradona's. They injured Maradona.
I think he even tried to keep playing and they just dragged his body off the field.
I don't remember
seeing an image of that. But anyway, so, okay. So, but back to the Araujo point, Yeah, I think you and Barcelona are the two that always get the rant. You're the two that always seem to be on the show. I actually look back at this, who always get the concussion and head thing rant. And the Araujo situation was obviously terrifying because he was fully unconscious. He winds up trying to go back to defend, takes like 20 steps, and then collapses in that weird way, fully unconscious. Iago Aspas, that is, as they say, a real one. That is a legend, not only of Celta de Vigo, a legend of the club. And I think for Barcelona fans, he and Eric Garcia, quick to the scene, got Araujo on their side. You know, you don't mess with that kind of stuff. I've worked with CPR stuff before. Like, it's serious. Like, you get them on their side, you do the right thing, and then get the medical professionals out as fast as possible. To me, I was more like, not even furious. Like, I was afraid and I was frustrated by the Araujo stuff and people saying that. Like, for me, obviously, even if he's ready to go on Sunday, I don't care. Like, I think he should be shut down for the year. There's only three matches left, right? Like, just like there's, and I've gone over this before. Like, he is going to have trouble with, like, I still have trouble with sleeping from the few concussions I've had. Like, sleeping will be an issue, looking at screens, tons of other things, driving. Like, there's so many different things that, like, the long-term effects of concussions can have on you. Even like the hockey players. I mean, the hockey players are always a great example. I worked in hockey for a long time, and Sidney Crosby, one of the best examples, like one of the greatest, at least on a stick, skill-wise, to ever do it. But he's had those concussion issues on and off for more than a decade, right? And so for him to be 22 years old, it's just going to keep following him. And so you just want to take as much time, take all the time he needs, get himself right. Now, the Gabi thing, though, Gabi should have also just come off the field. And it wasn't because I just desperately wanted to see Hunter Oriana, or I don't really need to see Alvaro Sanz. Like, no offense to Alvaro Sanz, but I got it. It made sense to me when he went under Koeman and then Barca B. Like, I get it. But I wanted to see Oriana make his debut before he probably leaves Barca in the offseason. But it wasn't even that. It was that even though Xavi didn't have a midfielder, like, it was Gabi's turn to come off the field when he took that hit. Like, there's no way. Like, there's no way that Ron Araujo, it's a head thing. So it depends on, like, the angles. But there's no way that they clash heads like that. And the impact did that to Araujo, and Gabi does not have some ill effects. This is like, what, the third or fourth time that you've heard me yell about the Gabi thing. He should have come off. Like, I know it puts Barca at a disadvantage, and that match could have ended 3-3 if Gabi was on the field, but I don't know. But I just think Xavi and the officials got it wrong. Like, I didn't see barely any concussion protocol whatsoever. So, like, yeah, we have to trust them and medical professionals.
Sadly, generally speaking, in football in general, the concussion protocols are either – like horrible or non-existent. Like, I obviously not to like get too into this topic, but like Taylor Twellman has been an advocate since he retired for obvious reasons, and he's been a real critic. Every time something like this happens, he's very critic of it, because it's just sadly it's a worldwide problem in football. Concussions aren't taken as seriously as they should, and Gabi and Araujo aren't the first. They should be the last, but sadly they won't.
There should be a medical emergency. Yeah. There should be a medical emergency head injury substitute. Like, that should exist. Like, there should be a caveat. Like, it should barely reviews. And for those who would abuse it, like, that's the whole point. Like, you don't have those kind of things. We can't have nice things when people abuse it. But I mean, I think for a player that's getting a head injury like that, like, the choice to take them off, right, as a medical emergency, like, usually those are the players you want on the field. But the guys that are playing at that level, that hard, that take those injuries, like, you always think it's usually center backs, right? It's usually like, I always think of the Italian guys, like Chiellini, Bonucci. Like,
how many times have we seen Chiellini with the head?
Just wrapped around his head. Like, so, and those guys, you're going to keep them on the field. Like, you want them on the field. So if they pass the concussion protocol, you keep them on the field. But yeah, I think there should be like a sixth. I mean, I know now we have six subs and you're missing half a team, but you're not. Like, you're not getting a medical emergency head injury sub more than what? I mean, if this year it would have been for Gabi three of the four times, but right? That's what you're talking about. You're talking five times a year, you know, just to be careful.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Craig doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But I agree with you. Araujo, I don't think he should be anywhere near the squad. Like, we only need 1 point in the next two games to secure the second spot and secure playing in the Super Cup next year. So if we can't earn one freaking point in the next two games, then we just don't deserve to finish second. So it's just, especially next game, where God knows how Xavi is going to feel the competitive 11 with all the injuries, suspensions, and whatnot. It just doesn't make any sense to throw out Araujo through the Wolves. Yeah. Just play Lenglet. And then, I don't know, even play Umtiti. It is
what dust them off.
Yeah. It's going for the ride. Yeah. Clockhouse or Orange or whatever that movie was called. Just end this crazy season. But I wouldn't put Araujo like anywhere near the squad. Just let him heal. Think of next season. So I agree.
Yeah, I think we're going to see Danny Alves at the back alongside Umtiti and Lenglet. And then I think Oscar Mangatha. We saw him play a little bit of left back. And then he went back over to the right side. But we have seen him play left back in the past. Xavi did it to him once before. So I think we're going to see Mangatha on the left. And then you'll see Lenglet and TT in some combination. And then Alves, because the Barca B team is fighting for promotion. And I don't think this is not the moment for Mikel Marmol. That Xavi's going to throw him into that. And then in front of that, yeah, Busquets is going to be back. And that means Gabi's going to have to play again. And I think then that Xavi does start Ricky Puig, or he'll do the same thing again. And just trust that Busquets, he may do a better job in the double pivot than Frankie de Jong does. And maybe he'll try to experiment again with Ferran Torres and Dembele and Aubameyang in Memphis. And that experiment, not to say the front four didn't work well, but the reason it didn't work well, and it did, I mean, it also did, because they won 3-1. So it's like, as much as you say the experiment didn't work well, like they scored goals. And the issue was that they scored goals because of Dembele, and he had just 13 touches and completed only 5 passes before he set up the first goal 30 minutes in. So he wasn't getting service. He wasn't touching the ball. But then the moment he did, because of the spacing between Torres and Aubameyang in Memphis with 3 different runners going at the Celta de Vigo goal. And Celta does not have, even though they've enhanced their defense this year, that's why they weren't fighting relegation. It's still an average run of the mill, La Liga defense. So it's not like a superior top 5 defense in the league. And so with him running at them, with that space opened up in the forwards, as long as they got in the final third, it was going to be an opportunity. And so Celta may have outshot Barcelona, but they put the ball in the back of the net. I don't have much left on Celta other than a quick little fun thing about Iago Aspas, and that is that he scores 43.9% of his team's goals. And unfortunately, that goal was not really part of his majesty. It's not going to go into his Hall of Fame. It was a terrible, horrible mistake by Ter Stegen. And then obviously, and that's what Ter Stegen seems to be, right? It's a lot like my puppy. It's 2 steps forward, 1 step back. He does really well outside using the bathroom, and then he poops in the house, you know. But not Ter Stegen. I mean, the puppy, who's also a sheep. So
it's kind of crazy because Ter Stegen had an incredible save during the first half. And Chacho Cude, like Celta's coach, said it in the press conference after the game. Like
that left.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that, if that goes in, that just changes the whole complexity of the game. But it didn't, because he made an incredible save. And then he makes that blunder. And it's like, I know I'm a big critic of Eric Garcia, and I still kind of am, but he had a really good game. I just want to throw it out there because I know some people that I don't want to be labeled as like the Eric Garcia hater. But then he had a really bad error. But I know, taking that aside, that's the thing. If Eric can try and somehow like cancel those quote unquote big specific errors here and there, because for example, he had a really good game. that it could have been overshadowed by that one mistake if it ends up going in the back of the net. It didn't. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, he had a really good game. It's just that hopefully, again, I would love to be like wrong about Eric in the long term. And if he manages, I don't know if it's concentration, whatever that may be, but to like cancel those big, it's just one. But at the end of the day, it's one big error. So I just wanted to throw it out there because I didn't want like, hey, I do say good things about Eddie Garcia when I see him.
Yeah. So. Well, I do wonder, like, in the last few weeks I've been doing this with Araujo, now has made two blunders that he did not make for the first 7 months of the year. Yeah. This one including Ter Stegen, the communication issue. And we want him to be our communicative leader at the back. And he wasn't that again. And we don't bring that, you know, I bring it up now, but that's because he's okay with the head injury. It was something that we didn't talk about.
He had two.
This
game. Yeah.
So, and like, and so I've asked people like, so what if Eric Garcia made those mistakes? It's like, it's one of those things where like, imagine, and then the mistake he made against Real Betis too, right? Like when he was dribbled past for the face of the first time all season.
Yeah.
And so
he's had quite a few, I agree.
Yeah, it was a rough week, but also Barcelona came away with two wins from those games. Not only that, but Araujo also, you know, it's a net positive. Like he always doing so much more than the mistakes that he's made. And that's the argument with Garcia is Garcia, for the mistakes he makes defensively, ever making up for that with all the that where he put it, what he puts in. So yeah, I don't have anything else from Celta unless you do. Again, Ricky Poo's like,
Ansu Fati. I love Ansu. I'm in love. Now that Haaland is gone, and I'll never think of Haaland. Maybe if he executes that 150 million clause and ends up going to Barcelona down in 3 years span. But that's why I'm done. Moving on. I want this episode of the Barcelona podcast to be my Rafa is letting go of Erling Haaland. It pains me. I suffered. I cried a little bit, but I'm letting go. And now Ansu is my main focus. And I love to see Ansu getting fitness back, because if he stays healthy, I'm a firm believer that he's right there with Mbappe, Haaland, De Bruyne, like the next quote unquote big generation. So,
yeah, I talked about the scoring rate on the earlier show in the week. His scoring rate is incredible. It's impossible to possibly keep that up. But yes, Ansu, he was a golden boy for a reason 2 seasons ago. If healthy, that's a huge thing. Like, he probably won't be healthy. But if healthy, Ansu Fati is just as good as all the names you mentioned. Absolutely 100%. Do not get it mistaken that Erling Haaland scored just 21 goals this year. So as much as everyone's going crazy about Haaland, and also there's a stupid thing that everyone's like, oh, 55 million plus for Ferran Torres, and Haaland went for just 60. That's not true at all because of the commissions. Like in total, Haaland is going to cost Man City much, much closer to 130, 140, 150 million when all is said and done, with commissions to his father, with Riola's passing, it'll be to the agency that Riola is a part of and taken over, as well as the commission for the signing as well, and all the parties involved. But speaking of transfers and speaking of letting go, it is time. I was in the last 5 years, you know who I'm talking about. No. We're not doing Frankie de Jong just yet. No, we're not doing Frankie de Jong just yet. We're talking about another player that is definitely going to be in the Premier League. That's going to be the Premier League. Right. A little more smiles, a little light, a little more jovial. In the last 5 years that I've hosted this show, I have been so calculated in my negativity towards Felipe Coutinho. And he is the one player more than anyone else that I think, to a point, I have been unjustly mean to and negative to. And I'm just so happy that I don't abuse him or anything like that. He never fit. And from the very beginning, from that very first, I looked back on show number 4, we talked about Liverpool's Felipe Coutinho, Frances and I did. And I was like, I don't think he's going to fit. And then we did that for 6 months. I said, I don't think he's going to fit. And then we did a show about how he might be jammed as a square peg into a round hole at Barcelona. And we went through the whole tactical breakdown, and I tried to go back at his Espanyol time and his Inter Milan time. And I tried to just, as every Barca fan would do, like, hey, this transfer cannot be this odious. There's no way that this transfer is so nonsensical that they would purchase a player that will absolutely not fit. And 106 appearances, 26 goals. I mean, the website, that being FC Barcelona, even put 65 wins, 24 draws, and 15 losses, and 2 loan spells in his time at Barcelona. And if you're taking a left winger and a center midfielder, whatever you want to call him, because again, I don't have a position at Barcelona, I can't tell you what it was. But if you have to tell, like, a manager what his wins, draws, and losses were that he was involved in, that's It did not go well. That is the easy answer. But he's now 29 years old. He was 24 when the saga began. He's now 29 years old, had 4 goals and 3 assists in 16 Premier League games, which is good under Steven Gerrard, who seems to like him. And I wish nothing, and I say this sincerely, I wish nothing but the best for Felipe Coutinho, who now goes to Aston Villa for 20 million, which, believe it or not, is about 15.5 million more than I thought the Barcelona were going to get for him when they sold him eventually. And the club, that being Barcelona, has also inserted a 50% sell-on clause for any future sale of the player. And why that is important is because if Aston Villa is relegated, let's say in the next 2 years over the course of his whatever new contract he signs with them or contract extension, then Barca will get 50% of whatever that reduced fee will be. Because if Aston Villa gets relegated, then Barca will be able to, you know, again, that does not really help Aston Villa because they'll be heading down. And 50% of the sale for, but you know, you purchase Coutinho in the hopes that he helps you stay up. And I think he's going to help them so much more as a valuable piece. Sorry, Rafa, I had to do the Felipe Coutinho thing. I just felt there's a peace, you know, there's a peace that I feel, a calm, even though there's just chaos still at Barcelona, at least Coutinho's not involved in the chaos anymore.
I'm happy it's over. It feels like we say that in Spanish, gangrena, as it in the English, gangrene. Like when, like, like your foot, like if you're hiking and it's really cold and you just gotta like cut the entire leg or something like that. I think it's called gangrene, like on your leg or whatever. It kind of feels like that. Like he was like slowly eating away Barcelona's body, and it was up to a point where, hey, we got to literally cut our entire leg in order to save the rest of the person. And it's the biggest transfer in Barcelona's history. It's probably the worst transfer in Barcelona history because of the price and the and what he actually ended up doing.
It is 100%. And yep.
I wanted it to, so that I was hopeful that it was kind of going to work in a way. Because of that, what ended up being the downfall, that he wasn't good at any specific position. Like he wasn't an interior izquierdo and he wasn't an extremo izquierdo as a left winger. So he was none. And I thought maybe blindly, now that I look at it, that was maybe going to benefit, be polyvalent in that aspect. At the end of the day, not only that, but what really bothered me about Coutinho during his spell at Barcelona, I mean, he's talented. Nobody can deny all the talent that Coutinho does have. Yeah. It's just that I don't know if attitude is the right word, but that fighting spirit that when things got rough, it didn't seem like he had the attitude to put the team on his back. And be like, no, like we may go down or we may lose, but we're going to go down fighting. It just was like when things went bad, he would just put his head down or inside like a turtle and hide. And that's what, like, damn, like we're looking for a Batman. Like you're a Robin at best. And that's to put it lightly. I was going to say another Batman character. So it was disappointing to see how, under pressure, like that Barcelona shirt, Xavi has said it numerous times in his press conferences, Barcelona shirt, Barcelona's kit weighs a ton. It's not made for everybody. You may be a great player, which Coutinho is. Let's not get it twisted. Technically, he's amazing. You may have been a great player at another great club like Liverpool, but Barcelona is completely different. It's not the same. And sadly, summarizes sadly the whole Neymar saga and how that was the start of the end for that whole generation.
Yeah,
not you and I, Barcelona's whole Bartomeu, the board, took Neymar's money, invested it in Coutinho and Dembélé, but more Coutinho. And it was a complete disaster. And I'm just happy that it's over. It's just time to move forward. And Kuman said that a lot. It is what it is. But now it's done and dusted. We got 20 million. I know there's gibberish in like how like the financial books work and whatnot, and that it counts now before May and things like that. So let's just move forward because Coutinho literally is a thing of the past now. So,
yeah, I mean, I cannot believe that they got him. They've sent him on loan to Bayern Munich and he scored 2 goals in that Champions League matchup against Bayern, against Barcelona. That is like
the football gods are full of irony and like to see people suffer in the most ironic way possible.
There was other players brought up, like Kleb from Belarus, the Arsenal midfielder, and the other ones that flopped, even like Douglas, obviously Lord Douglas. But those guys were not, the transfers for those guys were just, again, not justifiable in the same realm. Yeah, Felipe Coutinho could never outrun his transfer number. And the only, this is just top of my head, so people definitely hit me up on Twitter or whatever with other great examples. But one of the ones that I think of with Coutinho is after the Neymar money came in and he was like the big, you know, the golden goose that money was spent on. It kind of that, by messing up that transfer and getting all of that, those funds wrong on the transfer market, I mean, yes, Dembele as well. But again, Dembele was in theory. I mean, we're seeing that now. It took 5 years. But in theory, it was a thing that made sense. So I didn't yell about it then. I'm still not going to yell about it now. But because Coutinho didn't make any sense at all, that set the club back. Like by misusing those funds, it set the club back multiple years. And the only other player, and he was actually in a big grouping, and that being Marc Overmars way back when. Marc Overmars, when he came in, it was a pretty inflated for the time. It was a pretty big number. And when he came in, it took a little bit for Barcelona. Like, he did not fix the problems that he was supposed to. Like, he wasn't even supposed to be the savior. He was supposed to be one of those players like Coutinho. That was a really great player. He's supposed to be a starting caliber player. You put him right in the starting 11 and he enhances you. He helps you get back to glory. He helps put you back on that path. And Overmars never did that. It was an overflated number and it did not work. So again, there are definitely other numbers, but you know, it really, the whole idea of transfer numbers and those huge, you know, sums, that's the last, 10 years, you know what I mean? Like even less than that. Neymar was the one who broke the whole market. But prior to that, you know, things were inflated and inflation works. And so many of the other really ones that didn't work out happened in the Premier League from 92, you know, when it became the Premier League from 92 through the 90s, when teams were really just going after guys with newfound money. And the Liga, with all the financial issues that Spanish football has had, even Barcelona and team in the Liga have not really had the opportunity to, we'll say, get it wrong so often. So like, I'm not saying that guys haven't flopped. I'm just saying like for guys that Barcelona tried to a big transfer on, and it fell short. I mean, the other one example would be the swap between Eto and Ibrahimovic. And because of Eto going the other way, that number wasn't what it could have been. But also because of the era they were in, Barca won regardless. You know what I mean? Regardless of Ibrahimovic, like it kept happening. But like, let's say Ibrahimovic, you know, had derailed Barca in the way that he could have, and they wind up not winning any trophies the next season, where, I mean, that would have been a calamity. All right. Speaking of calamities, we're going to hit some Frankie de Jong talk right now, heading into the rumor mill. If it was yesterday, Rafa, I would have started with this. Frankie de Jong to Manchester United for 80 million euros. But Spanish journalists, Catalan journalists have really come out in full force and tried to quiet this a little bit. But yeah, let's talk about Frankie de Jong now.
What can I say? I got it right here. Frankie de Jong, first jersey. Well, I think first year, second year, whatever that may be. This just seems, we don't know yet if it's going to end up happening or not, but it's something that I don't think should surprise anybody, because if there's one big name that's been thrown around during the past year and a half that Barcelona, if needed, would sell in order to make a profit and fix, in a way, their financial issues, not completely, but again, in a way, it's Frankie de Jong. So when I heard the news, like I was literally watching like Gerard Romero's stream when he said it. So it didn't caught me by surprise. Like it's like not the first time we've heard about it, but to see that it might be like, oh my God, like it might really happen now. That's what caught me off guard a little bit, especially that it needed to happen before June. Because then that money would count like in this year for this year. That's financial reasons, gibberish and all that I'm not going to get into right now. But at the end of the day, if it ends up happening, I think what will make this a good or bad deal is what Barcelona ended up doing with that money and how they repurpose it and into what positions. Because if they use this money, what may count, because that, like, Frenkie de Jong still had, like, Barcelona still have to pay Ajax, I think, some amount of the transfer fee. It hasn't been paid in full yet. But again, if somehow Mateo Alemán turns Frenkie de Jong into, and not literally like turning him into, but like a Lewandowski or maybe a Jules Koundé in some sort of way alongside more Barcelona players and whatnot, then I think it'll lessen the blow in a way, because Frenkie is still 24 years old. It's true that he hasn't adapted to the quote-unquote Barcelona way the way we thought he would have already. I think there's been reports that Xavi has been frustrated with Frenkie because, again, we all know the incredible amount of talent he has. He's a physical specimen as well. Literally, in my opinion, he is a way lesser version of Kevin De Bruyne. A really, really technical player and a real like physically, he's strong, he's fast. He's not the player Kevin De Bruyne is, of course, right now, but he has that potential, in my opinion. Whether he has that potential within Barcelona's playing style or in the Premier League, that's another discussion. And that's what's going to pay me if he ends up leaving, because he might not have had the success we thought he would have in Barcelona because of the complexity of playing as an interior for Barcelona, which we have spoken numerous times. But I have zero doubt that in a specific context in the Premier League, letting Frenkie be Frenkie, running like beautiful horse without any like leashes and whatnot, just flowing his hair back and forth, I think Frenkie will be amazing in the Premier League. And then
a very erotic picture, Rafa.
I know. He'll be really good in the Premier League, where tactically maybe he won't have those constraints anymore. And then we'll be, oh my God, look, like, oh my God, look what we gave away. Look, the player. But we got to think, would if Frenkie ends up going to United or the Premier League in general, and he ends up being amazing, fulfilling his potential, we got to be really like consider, would Frenkie had been this Frenkie that we're seeing in the Premier League with that playing style in Barcelona's playing style? So I think, honestly, it's just a matter of waiting and just seeing if he does end up going, how we repurpose that money. Because if we end up using that money on, I don't know, Carlos Soler and not big, big names, I think that's going to like pain a little bit more for Barcelona fans. Because if you let Frenkie go, you're thinking, well, then we got to bring Lewandowski or a Jules Koundé or like a big name. But if we're going to like sign somebody that may end up being really good, that's why like I threw out Carlos Soler, because he's not a big name. But if he ends up coming, who knows if he ends up being a great player. So I don't want to like down on a player. I'm just saying like a name. Barcelona fans need excitement. And if you're going to sell Frenkie de Jong and you don't bring a big name that fits obviously within Barcelona's style, then Laporta and Mateu are going to face, I think, they're going to face backlash from Barcelona fans if that doesn't happen.
Yeah, Robert, you talked a lot about the sporting sense of it. And I think I'm going to start with a really negative my sense of why this should be as negative as it is, or as cynical as it could be. And the boring part of this is that I'm having a hard time thinking of this in a sporting sense, because I think this is primarily a financial decision the club feels like they have to make if they're going to sell him to Manchester United. And again, he could also refuse to go, you know, Ten Hag and not playing in the Champions League. Like, that's enough for him to say no. And apparently Xavi has also not signed off on it, but the deal itself between the clubs might be 95%. But, you know, I think the only sporting thing here is that Pedri and Gabi with the picks over Frankie DeYoung for the interior spots for the future. And obviously that makes sense. But again, that has nothing to do with DeYoung. I think DeYoung would still want to fight for his spot and be competitive. He loves living in Barcelona. But to look at the financial reasons for why this could happen and even the distribution of funds, because the names there are Koulibaly, Lewandowski. Again, nobody, like we'll say big, like the young players, sub 23 superstars that we keep talking about, like our stars that we're talking about, like you're talking like the 27 to 36 or whatever. Like it'll be a total of, you know, you using this to pay for Azpilicueta's wages plus whatever, like, and get Barcelona's transfer limit number, a wage number, still low enough that you can get everybody underneath and actually get players in there. Because even then, it seems like Barcelona is still on borrowed time when it comes to January. That's what some of the rumblings I'm hearing is that the January guys, technically, Barcelona is still fighting to get under the number that needs to get, like, without it, to not deal with a penalty next year from January. And so, like, that's what I'm seeing for good reason. Like, Sergio Roberto is getting these drive-by shots at Roberto. Like, Man City is signing Erling Haaland and Barcelona renewing Sergio Roberto. But a few things here, and a few things that also I think make a little bit of sense. Like I've said before, you need to get Roberto's renewal done now before January 30th to get Gabi's deal done now. Again, that still continues to make sense. The timing of that is really important. All of these things need to be done by June 30th to put them on this fiscal year's balance and not the next one. Just like what Laporta tried to do even last season, where he tried to take the biggest losses then and not later, so the wage limit will rise later and improve. So even if Barcelona really are continuing to be in that financial dire mess, they're again hedging their bet that they're going to reinforce in January, because that might be their only option, that they have to get, you know, it might be another tough summer. It might be a rough summer for Barca again, and looking ahead to next January and looking ahead to next summer. And that's how you get out of a problem. And we were warned, this is a multi-season problem. You know, just because they lost Messi wasn't the end of that story. And there was warnings that there was more coming on the horizon. Again, it's 140 million euros of not even debt, but to get under that wage limit. And another question too about where that money goes. Like, what if DeYoung has to be moved to make Dembele's renewal possible? That was one of the questions I asked. And at this point, again, we only saw a taste of Ansu and Dembele, but would I trade DeYoung for what we're seeing of Dembele? I think you have to, because Frankie is a really, really good player. And he's a high level player that it just eats up minutes, especially in that Barca midfield, and does a great job at figuring out what he is. And now I'm talking about the sporting thing a little bit, but if you have to decide between what you can get from Dembele, he just wins you games. Like, again, like single-handedly against Celta de Vigo. Yeah, everyone played a part, but Dembele just 1v1 took a guy on, and Barca won a match they shouldn't have, where they didn't bring their best. They were kind of limping and they still got a result in La Liga. You know, and that's because of Dembele. Like, that's what he does. And the same argument that I put him in the same category as Ansu and Pedri. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm not overrating him. But what he is a guy who just wins matches with the ball at his feet, just like Pedri, just like Ansu. There's these moments. There's a blink. You blink and it happens. And DeYoung doesn't have that ability to kind of just win a match with a moment, with sheer force of will. He's also a different player. And from the sporting perspective, that kind of is what frustrates me. That, as I tweeted yesterday, the first thing I thought was, we never got to see DeYoung at the pivot for any extended amount of time. Now he had 3 years. So people are saying, oh, look what he did in 3 years. He doesn't deliver fourth. And this whole thing was that eventually, right? Eventually Xavi, eventually somebody sees him as the pivot, as that player that's going to dribble forward, maraud forward, use his defensive acumen. We're never going to see that Frankie DeYoung, because even at Ajax, he didn't really do that. It's a double pivot with Shona, who kind of protected him a bit. But anyway, we're not going to ever see him at a pivot. And yet Frankie DeYoung, for 75 million euros, will have come and gone with no succession plan for Busquets. And like, in my brain, I cannot make that make sense. Where, right, you got through the whole Frankie de Jong era is come and gone, and still Busi remains. And it's not that Busi's done anything wrong. It's that even with the transfers coming in, like Kessier is not a replacement for Busquets. I talked to the Milan guys. He is an interior. That's what it is. And I think there's a lot of pressure right now being put on Nico to be in a double pivot potentially, because again, with Pablo Torre, who I don't want to overrate him, but Pablo Torre is a very, very good teenager. Another very, very good teenager. He might flop. He may not be ready for the moment, but I'm telling you, from the responsibility that he takes on for Racing Santander, he is their best player. He very much alone puts that team forward into promotion to the second division. Pablo Torre is just like Pedri and Gavi. I think he's 19, so he's a little bit older even. So he is ready, I think, to step in. maybe not even year one, but maybe it's Barca B plus, you know what I mean? We get a taste of him a little bit and we get it, but there's a lot on Nico then moving forward. And there's a report that came out today. He might even go on loan, or the club might even choose to sell him with a buyback. And that information is antithetical to the idea that somebody is, as in Nico, is going to be the long-term pivot to replace Busquets. I don't know what Barca is planning at that position, and it's terrifying.
But I want to ask you about this real quick, because I agree. Maybe, like, if we're looking at this like in black and white, there's a quote unquote overbooking of the interior role. Gavi, Pedri, Paulo Torre coming in, Kessie coming in. Sergi Roberto is still going to be in the team, whatever that may be, to whatever role he plays.
And then, Nico played interior too.
Nico played interior
too. He wasn't a pivot. He was an
interior. That's about 5-6 players. So there's clearly an overbooking that you might say, well, we are kind of covered that we can let Frankie go in a way, and we still have a bunch of interiors. Don't you think that maybe that's what, not Xavi necessarily, but Laporta, Mateo, and all the directors seem like, hey, like you said, we still don't have a quote-unquote successor for Busquets. Whoever he ends up being, it's not going to live up to Busquets' standard. That's obvious. But, and probably not even come close, but at least like something that might resemble, at least playing style-wise, what Busquets is. Don't you think that maybe this could be like, hey, let's cut our losses with Frenkie because we are covered as in with the interiores, and let's just try, and maybe whether they're right or wrong, they don't think Frenkie would ever excel as a long pivot.
Yeah.
And then try and like repurpose that. Who that might be, I don't know. Yeah. I haven't heard any rumblings and whatnot. I mean, Suimendi was mentioned a while ago. I know the big things like Tchouameni, that's not going to happen because of what Monaco, what you just said, like the big young stars.
Make it happen. I push back a little on the overbooking though, because you could have said that the forward line is overbooked. That's why Adama Traore doesn't get any minutes. That's why Luke de Jong and Martin Brathwaite, you know, Luke de Jong has his role, but Brathwaite doesn't see the field at all, even when he came back healthy. You could say those things are overbooked, but in the same way in that midfield, like, that midfield is limping. That midfield played with two midfielders. Frankie de Jong was one of them, plus Gabi. So even if Kessié arrives and Pablo Torre maybe isn't ready, like even if Kessié arrives, that means he's that third midfielder then when Busquets inevitably gets a suspension, because Busquets, he got yellows this year. He's going to get suspended. He does get suspended. Every like seventh match he gets suspended because he just picks up those yellows in transition. And you think a year older Busquets is going to get less yellows in transition? I don't think so. And then the same thing, if Pedri continues to be as injury plagued as he is now, what, every seventh game, you're missing two of your three starters. And now all of a sudden it's Kessié, it's Gabi, and you hope you didn't put Nico out on loan because he wants more minutes. Right. And like, I'm just saying, like, about the overbooking, like these squads that compete across everything, and for Xavi to push for second to be a part of the Spanish, of the Super Cup, like you need a deep squad. Like you need to be six deep at midfield in the best of it. And, you know, so immediately my thought too is like, yeah, Pablo Torre is supposed to be the young, the Barca B midfielder that's going to start to get moved in, right? But then beneath that, like I'm trying to look at that midfield for Barca B, and Oriana was supposed to be the next guy. And then, you know, there are some other kids, right? There's Alex Garrido, but that's what I'm already looking at. I'm saying, is Xavi going to get to a point next season where three of those midfielders that we're mentioning are all out injured and he's got to hit the panic button? Right. And then all of a sudden you've got Eric Garcia at the pivot spot. And you're like, what is happening right now? And those things, not to say that Eric Garcia won't be, I know people have fun with that and people a lot suggest about the pivot thing, but I always defend Eric Garcia. I'm worried about him as a pivot. I'm throwing that out there. Like, I don't want to take too much time thinking about that, but everything he does well, everything he does poorly, I can see being greatly exposed at the pivot position. And so I don't want to think about that right now. Like, I'll consider it if Xavi does, because I trust Xavi. But I think the last question for you, Rafa, is that if this is it for De Jong, how will we remember his time at Barcelona? Because I think you and I have been, I say, much more kind to him. I don't think I've ever gone full blown, like even in the times when he didn't do well and things weren't working, I always think it was more of a structural thing. And I always thought there was things to fix. Like, I felt like at his worst, it was a spacing with Busquets. And to me, his problems always just seems to be instructional, like from the manager, like this is what the manager is trying to do. And we saw these improvements under Xavi already about one-touch passing, a little bit quicker, his spacing with Busquets. And there were moments under Xavi when it started to make sense. And I think if you hear that Xavi doesn't want him to leave, it again goes back to my thing about the finances. I can see the club basically saying, we are going to sell you. Like, can we sell you, please, for 80 million euros? And Xavi still not signing off on it. And both of those things being true. Because I can see how Xavi sees this player, sees his quality, and says, I know how I'm going to make this work. Even next to Busquets, there are moments, and we need to just make those moments all the time. Can that happen? I mean, that's what most people say, right? Inconsistency is how we'll remember his time at Barcelona. But I disagree with that. I think we are going to remember him as a good player in a rough time for the club, when the club was going through a lot of transition and a lot was on his shoulders.
I think it's a mixture of both. And then, like, real quick with the Xavi thing, I think he might. And I don't think he wants to part ways with Frenkie. But at the end of the day, due to the dire economical situation, Laporta, Mateo, and company might go to Xavi like, hey, I know you don't want to, like, sell Gavi, but you also want, like, 8 new players because you need a left back, a right back, a center back, and this and that. And, like, the only way we might be able to kind of do that is we got to sell him. So you got to pick your poison. Do you want Frenkie? But then we can't give you a left back, a right back, a center mid, and this and that. So it's kind of like Laporta and Mateo going up to Xavi. You got to pick a pill, like the Matrix, the red or the blue.
Yeah,
it is what it is, sadly. And I think Xavi, during his last press conference, he was so, like, his joy was taken out of him, because I think he kind of knew that, damn, like, I'm going to have to sign off on something that I don't necessarily want to because of all the needs of this team. So he just, like, the joy that he came in and positivity. Now it's like, you see him as like a Dementor in Harry Potter, sucked the life out of him.
Yeah.
So, and then going back to Frenkie, the thing is, I think it can be everything that you said can be, it's like a little bit of everything with Frenkie. Yeah, it is true. He came in during one of, if not the worst eras of Barcelona's recent history, without a doubt. Has he been inconsistent? What a lot of people say that you don't necessarily agree with. I think he kind of has been to a certain extent because of it. I think we're prisoners of expectations. And when Frenkie came in, I think the majority of Barcelona fans were glad that he came in at such a young age. Even the transfer fee, given how crazy the transfer fees had been for the most part, wasn't that crazy given the context. So I think there was a certain, like, unity between everybody in that span. Like, hey, Frenkie is really good. He's going to be the guy that leads the way in Barcelona's midfield for the next 10 years. So I think, honestly, my comparison, it's kind of like a romantic comedy in a way that it's like the couple was wasn't just meant to be. And they part ways. They cry together. And then they wish the best for, hey, I wish you nothing but the best. And then you see the other person getting married, having kids. And you're like, it hurts you. But at the same time, you know that it wasn't going to work out with that person. So I think, to me, that's, if that does end up happening, that's how I will remember Frenkie, what could have been.
Didn't he finish second or as the second or third top midfielder in the Ballon d'Or voting from that semifinal Champions League performance at Ajax? Like, when they went to the semifinal, I remember him being a high, high selection in the Ballon d'Or voting that year, the year when he came to Barcelona, right? Like, that's, I was on the back of the expectations of being that midfielder. And that's true. Like, for 75 million euros, there was an expectation that he was going to be a top five midfielder in the world. And now that he has been outpaced by Pedri, the potential of Gavi at 17 certainly has outpaced what De Jong in his prime, you know. And that's a big question too about Barca. How many players do they have in their prime? Really, it's just Frankie De Jong and Dembélé in that age group. The rest are still approaching it. And the others are obviously on the other side of it. And it's to wrap it all up, there is credence to those Dest rumors too, because it's the same thing. The Dest as a valuable asset, like, very few players on the team are untouchable, that just being Ansu, Pedri, Gavi, if he renews, and Araujo. And so Dest, he's going to be sold for players that are not as good. And that is another thing about the Frenkie de Jong thing. Like, even though we can find some logical reason as to why Barcelona needs to sell him for the market value that he's at. Because again, if he's 25 next summer and has like a similar season and it doesn't work out again, and Barcelona didn't reinforce in other positions with it, then his market value goes down. So yes, from a business perspective, now would be the moment. You've got to sell him when the iron's hot. I get that. But in the same regard, like, we can look around world football and admit that there's a good chance that, yes, there are other players in the team that could step up in those spots. Mitchell's a good position for Barca because they got very fortunate with transfers. Again, that's why I have a lot of faith in the Pablo Torre one as well. But like, if you're looking to bring in, as you mentioned, Carlos Soler or Fabian Ruiz, like, those are just lesser versions. Well, Carlos Soler is a little different of a player. He might fit in Xavi's system really, really well. But like, Fabian Ruiz to me is like for like, it's just a worse version of Frankie de Jong. And the club has been interested in him quite some time, but I literally just see when I watch him play Frankie de Jong, except he just doesn't have the exact same dynamism that de Jong has. He just happens to be Spanish, right? That's what he has. And I don't know how far that goes for winning trophies, right? So anything you get in his stead is not going to be as good. And again, to the Dest point, if Dest is sold for 20 million, that means whatever right back option they bring in, again, mostly most likely Azpilicueta, is because he's coming on a free transfer. And that's a stopgap solution. And it goes to the fact that if De Jong is sold, and I do go back to this, if De Jong is sold, that is terrifying to me because it is an admittance by the club that the financial problems that we were not even promised, but like, Messi was supposed to be the great sacrifice. And then the free transfers were supposed to be the right decision. Two transfer windows, summer for Memphis and the January, like, those sacrifices and those calculations, Eric Garcia coming in on free, like, they were all supposed to be to help get Barcelona back. And we were also warned that this might be continuing. And so if Frankie de Jong is sold, to me, that says that any expectation you have of some big player coming, it's going to have to be who you think, those free agent, those stopgaps, players who are much older, likely players in their 30s. And then maybe, yeah, Koulibaly might be the answer for 25 to 30 million. And then all of a sudden, you're putting a lot more on Koulibaly to be the savior, especially if he's 25 to 30 and that's the club has 40 to spend. And then now you have to decide between Koulibaly and Grimaldo to be, you know, to, do you grab a backup left back or you go another year with Alba and just make it work? Because Alba has made it work for one whole season without a backup. There's no backup left back all season long. And Barca just made it work. So they're going to just try to do it again and say, hey, you know, we're struggling financially. That's why we had to sell Frankie de Jong. So we don't have it. Like, you have to just, you want to reinforce the center back spot. Then that's what they're going to do with Koulibaly. And there might be not be enough funds. And like, and those are the kind of sacrifices that I'm considering. That I'm saying, like, when you're looking at the transfers, yeah, like, of course, I'd love to make a bunch of videos about, and I already did this, but I'd love to make a bunch of, like, you know, guys I'm looking at, you know, players that you're considering. Or, and then for the report that came out about Ruben Neves, Tchouameni, and Zubimendi from Real Sociedad, those are the picks to replace Busquets, right? And that one went viral last week. People went crazy and excited. Of course, I was one of the first to Zubimendi. I'm patting myself on the back. I mentioned him like before he was even breaking in, when he was fighting for time against Guevara and Guevara of Real Sociedad. Like, I said, Zubimendi, there was something good about him, and he's now entering his prime. He's good. You know, I don't know. He's not crazy good. People are going to be disappointed. I just won one Kool-Aid, but I think he's good. I think he's a nice rotation piece, especially he can play the pivot in a solo pivot position. I've said what I think of Tchouameni before. And Ruben Neves should also be, you know, a pretty good piece in. But all three of those guys are impossible, especially if you're selling Frankie de Jong. Like, if you're selling Frankie de Jong, there's no midfielder coming for 40 or 60 million. So I think it's either he is here and the club can maybe do some moves financially, or he's gone. And I think that's even more restrictive to what they can do. I finally got to my point. My wife always gets at me that I don't get to my point for a while.
I agree in the midfield. Because Kessie's coming in now. He's not a pivot. He's going to play as an interior. But I honestly, if we were selling Franken, this does end up happening. And then on top of that, I also read like the Dest rumors and whatnot. And I didn't know that, like, Monchi apparently was asking about Dest during the last January transfer window and whatnot. And I don't know what could be the big spending Barcelona make this summer, if at all, if they do end up making one, because obviously, apart from the free transfer, Casey Christensen, Azpilicueta, Marcos Alonso, if he ends up coming, like, apart from the free ones, if Barcelona are able to manage one, two would be hallelujah. But maybe one, then what would that be? Around the 40, 45-ish million transfer fee number, then what would that be? Lewandowski, if Bayern end up selling him? Or maybe you're able to, like, Koulibaly, or maybe with Sevilla, you're able to somehow throw in Dest plus 40 million for Koundé if he doesn't end up going to Chelsea. Like, whatever the hell ends up happening, I think there's only one option. I mean, there's only Barcelona will only have one option of, like, making a quote unquote big splash, whether that's at the back or at the front. I don't think the big splash, if it ends up happening, like you said, will be in the midfield. So at the end of the day, I just want to go back to what I said at first to close things out. The whole Frankie the Young thing, if it ends up happening, him going to Manchester, I think will be tied up with whether Barcelona are able to get a Lewandowski or a Jules Koundé with Dest and Jibby Jabba, because I don't think Koulibaly, who, if he ends up coming, I think would be a really good player and an upgrade, defensively speaking. But I don't think that would be a big, big name that would satisfy the need for Barcelona fans. That would either be a 34-year-old Lewandowski, yeah, because he is freaking Robert Lewandowski and people will forget about his age, or a Jules Koundé, because you would think, oh my God, young, he's great, fast, defensively speaking, he can play as a right back if needed as well. Like, I think it would take either a Jules Koundé at the back or a Lewandowski up front to be like, well, it was quote unquote worth it getting rid of Frankie.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I don't mean to drink the Kool-Aid that the club is putting out, but the most important things the club did was renewing Pedri, renewing Araujo, and then the next most important thing to do is renew Gavi. And again, if that means sacrificing yourself for another year of Sergio Roberto and having him just paying for him to watch games, I mean, also paying him a lot less to watch games in the stands this year, then you have to do that. And that was the thing that mattered. So, like, yes, new players are what excite you, because because it's always a logic, right? Like, how can, with the players you have now, why aren't you winning trophies with the players you have now? Like, how are those players going to be the ones moving forward, right? Don't you need new players? Don't you need other players to help the players who are currently there who couldn't win trophies, who just finished second, who were eliminated from the Europa League? Don't those players need to help? But, you know, we keep going back to it. And, you know, Rafa, you were right from the start that Ansu being healthy and returning for a full season next year changes Barcelona's trophy hopes, whether it's Champions League, whether it's, I mean, even advancing from the Champions League group stage and La Liga, Copa del Rey, Spanish Super, whatever. If you really care about the Spanish Super Cup that much, like, sure. Like, but whatever trophy that you're going for, a full healthy year of both Ansu and Pedri,
winning the league. I just want to say, like, if Ansu, like, if they stay healthy with that Araujo, yeah, we're winning the league next season. That's how I completely agree. My bad. I didn't want to interrupt you, but I just want to say that that's how much impactful they are. And it's like, oh, no wonder. Like, if you take Benzema and Vinicius out of Madrid and Courtois, they're three best players. They're not winning the league. It is. If you take away the two, three best players of any team, their title hopes, whatever that league, cup, yep, Champions League, whatever it may be, they go down the drain. And that's what happened to us.
And it's that thing where, how can your top two most important players be 19 years old, but they are. Like, it's also not a bad thing, because these are, like, prodigious talents, and they also get older every year in a good way and a bad way, because they continue to be older and injured, and that continues to be a problem. So yeah, I think those two returning healthy, and if those two play 50 games apiece next season, that is more impactful than any player that's going to show up, with, I think, honestly, the exception of Lewandowski. The guy scored 34 goals this year. Like, I don't care how old he is. Like, the guy scored 34 goals. And if you can afford him, he's going to put the ball in the back of the net. And he's a stopgap. He doesn't solve any problems for the future. But also, like, if he allows Ansu to not have to feel like, you know, the number 10, like, to be the guy, and Lewandowski just bangs in 30 goals for Barcelona, and yeah, they win the Liga. Like that's the simple formula there.
That's good with me.
So all right, good with us. We've gone over an hour here, so thanks so much for everyone who stuck with us. Yeah, it went longer than I thought, but a Frankie de Jong, it's a lot. There's a lot there. There's a lot of questions to be answered. Whether not only if he's going to stay at the club, but what that will mean to the club moving forward, and what that sale means in total. So I think we answered that pretty well, Rafa. Remember, you can follow Rafa on Instagram, also and Twitter, and Mesgate when podcast is where he does all his stuff, and the press conferences might be ending soon, but yeah, I know, but Xavi has been a good one for us. He's had some good ones. So we are also on Twitter and Instagram too, at the Barcelona Pod, our close Facebook group, the Barcelona Podcast, Patreon, same thing, the Barcelona Podcast, YouTube. Match reviews are also coming to the end, but I also have a few things cooking that I plan to unveil when the season ends. So that'll be a little more history stuff, a little stuff that we don't usually get to. Again, that's where I shine in the off season, the Barcelona Podcast over there. And then our store, that's in the show notes as well, the Barcelona Podcast. So I will be not debuting, but you can look at what the merch is. But I did order more merch, so it'll be coming to me soon. So I'll be able to show everybody what they can order and what they can look at. So thanks so much also to those who have purchased and have equipped themselves. So again, I want to remind you, tag yourself, tag us, so that I can say a thank you publicly on social media if you when you get your stuff. So thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. And Forza Barca.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.